All right, ready to dive into another case?
Always. Hit me with it.
This one's out of Pennsylvania, in Re Estate of Walter. And it's a real lesson in why you shouldn't just blindly trust your lawyer's advice, especially when it comes to estates.
Oh, those estate cases can get messy fast. What kind of materials do we have to work with on this one?
Let's see, we've got the court opinions, some legal briefs filed in the case, and some background information on fiduciary duties. Should give us a pretty good picture of what went wrong. And more importantly, how our listeners can avoid making the same mistakes.
Sounds like a plan. Let's get into it. What happened in this case?
Well, right off the bat, things get interesting. Our decedent, Carol Walter, passed away back in 2011.
Okay.
She left behind a few assets. Cash accounts, a collection of gold and silver coins, sounds pretty valuable, and a mobile home. Seems pretty straightforward so far. But here's the twist. Carol named her ex-daughter-in-law, Lynn, as the executrix of the estate.
Her ex-daughter-in-law, that's an unusual choice. Usually you see a spouse, a child, or maybe a sibling in that role.
Exactly. It's definitely not the typical pick. And as you can imagine, that's where the potential for conflict starts to creep in.
I can see that already. So what did the will say? Who was supposed to inherit what?
On the surface, the will itself seems pretty straightforward. Lynn was said to inherit $50,000, her children $20,000 each.
Okay.
And the coin collection was supposed to go to the National Military Family Association, a charity supporting military families.
Seems simple enough, but I'm guessing the execution of this will is where things went off the rails.
Oh, off the rails.
Yeah.
Putting it mildly.
Huh?
Let's just say Lynn made some decisions, acting on advice from the credit union where Carol held her accounts. That raised a lot of eyebrows.
Uh-oh. What did she do?
Well, she transferred a significant chunk of change, over $205,000 from Carol's accounts, into her own personal account.
Wait, hold on. Why would she do that?
She believed she was the beneficiary of those accounts. But that's where the first potential breach of fiduciary duty comes into play.
I see where this is going. So the court later found out that those accounts didn't have proper beneficiary designations, right? Meaning that the money should have stayed in the estate, not gone directly to Lynn.
Bingo.
Yeah.
You're catching on quick. Those accounts were legally assets of the estate, not Lynn's personal inheritance. This raises the question, should she have taken a closer look at those accounts? Even with the credit union's advice, maybe she should have been more cautious.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It sounds like she was relying on the professionals, but didn't do her own due diligence. Not a good combination.
And it doesn't stop there. Remember that valuable coin collection? It was sold for over $92,000. But instead of that money going straight to the charity, it ended up in the attorney's IOLTA account.
Hold up.
Oh.
IOLTA account. For our listeners who might not be familiar with that term, can you break down why that's a red flag in this situation?
Sure. IOLTA stands for Interest on Lawyers' Trust Accounts. Basically, it's a special account where attorneys hold client funds temporarily, usually for safekeeping. But in this case, depositing such a large sum from the estate into the attorney's IOLTA account, instead of going directly to the charity as the will instructed, well, that definitely raises some eyebrows.
Yeah, that would make me nervous too. It seems like Lynn was placing a lot of trust in the attorney's advice, maybe a little too much trust, almost like she was letting him call all the shots.
Right, and when you add that to the questionable account transfers, it starts to paint a picture of someone who might not have been as careful as they should have been with the estate's assets.
It's starting to sound less like following advice and more like negligence.
And if that wasn't enough, there's another layer to this story. Lynn's daughter, who was supposed to inherit $20,000, ended up with something else from the estate instead. The mobile home.
The mobile home. Hang on. Was that even legal? Could she just switch up the bequests like that?
That's a great question. And this is where the appearance of self-dealing becomes a major issue. Remember, Lynn's wearing multiple hats here. She's the executrix, a beneficiary herself, and the mother of another beneficiary.
Right. Talk about a potential conflict of interest.
You got it. Transferring an estate asset like that to a beneficiary, especially your own child, and potentially below market value, that screams conflict of interest.
Right.
As executrix, Lynn had a duty to act in the best interests of all the beneficiaries, not just her own family.
This is getting worse with every detail.
Oh, but wait, there's more. As if things weren't complicated enough already, the attorney involved, a guy named Carl Rominger, turns out he was embezzling money from the estate,
yeah.
Over $32,000.
You've got to be kidding me. So not only was Lynn potentially mismanaging funds, but the attorney she was working with was actively stealing from the estate. What a mess.
Talk about adding insult to injury, right?
Mm.
This whole situation really makes you wonder about Lynn's judgment. And it raises an important question for our listeners. How much responsibility does an executor have when it comes to choosing and monitoring the professionals they work with during probate? Should they have been more cautious? Done more background checks?
Absolutely. You can't just blindly trust anyone, especially when you're dealing with someone else's money. This case is a perfect example of that. So what happened next? Did the other beneficiaries find out about what Lynn was doing?
They sure did. As you can imagine, they weren't too happy about it. In 2015, Lynn was removed as executrix. And a year later, objections were filed against her accounting of the estate. That's what kicked off the legal battle we're going to unpack today.
This is getting good. I'm already hooked. What was she accused of specifically? And how did she defend her actions? Did she claim she was just following the attorney's bad advice?
Exactly. Her main defense was that she was simply following her attorney's guidance. But the Orphans Court, that's the specialized court in Pennsylvania that handles estate matters, they weren't buying it. They saw right through that excuse and found that she had breached her fiduciary duty. And to make matters worse for Lynn, the court decided to impose a surcharge.
The surcharge? Ouch. That's not good. A surcharge means Lynn was on the hook personally for all those financial losses the estate suffered. That's a hefty consequence, and it really drives home the point that you can't just plead ignorance or hide behind bad advice when you're dealing with someone else's money.
It definitely underscores the weight of responsibility that comes with being an executor. So let's unpack the court's reasoning a bit. They're looking at a few key issues. Lynn's reliance on her attorney as a defense, whether she actually breached her fiduciary duty, and who those MFFCU accounts really belonged to. Were they Lynn's or the estate's? Where do we even begin with all of this?
Let's start with that reliance on counsel defense. On the surface, it seems reasonable that if you're following a lawyer's advice, you should have some level of protection. But the court actually applied a two-part test here. First, was Lynn's choice of counsel prudent in the first place? Was this a qualified attorney with a good track record? And second, did Lynn continue to rely on that counsel even as red flags started popping up?
So picking a competent lawyer is the first step, but it's not a free pass. No. You can't just blindly follow their advice, especially when things start to smell a little funky. Like with those red flags we talked about earlier, the money going into the attorney's IOLTA account, that mobile home transfer, all those overdraft notices, those should have set off some alarm bells for Lynn, right?
Absolutely. The court found that Lynn, despite her bookkeeping experience, failed to properly monitor the estate's finances. She wasn't paying attention, or maybe she was intentionally looking the other way. There were clear signs that something wasn't right, but she didn't investigate further. It's not enough to simply delegate your responsibility as an executor. You have to stay actively involved and make sure things are running smoothly.
It's like you can't just set things on autopilot and hope for the best, especially when you're dealing with someone else's inheritance. You need to stay informed, ask questions, and really dig into the details. Was there anything specific in the court's language that stood out to you when they addressed this whole reliance on counsel argument?
There's one quote that really sums up the court's stance. Reliance on counsel is a factor in good faith, but not a blanket immunity. It perfectly encapsulates the idea that while seeking professional advice is a good thing, it doesn't give you a free pass to ignore your own responsibilities. It's a really important point for anyone serving as a fiduciary. You can't just blindly follow advice, especially when warning signs are flashing.
I'm getting flashbacks to all those times I blindly trusted a mechanic. Sometimes blind trust can be pretty expensive, especially when legal and financial matters are involved. So the reliance on counsel defense didn't fly. What about that second issue, the breach of fiduciary duty? How did the court justify that finding? What evidence did they point to?
The court found several instances where Lynn engaged in self-dealing. That means she was acting in her own interest instead of prioritizing the best interests of the estate. Taking those MFFCU accounts, even if she truly believed she was the rightful beneficiary, that move directly benefited her. It's a classic conflict of interest. As a fiduciary, your loyalty is to the estate, not to yourself. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, and that whole mobile home situation, transferring an asset below market value to her own daughter while she's acting as the executor, it doesn't exactly scream good judgment either. It's hard to see that as anything other than a blatant conflict of interest.
The court saw it the same way, and the fact that the attorney was siphoning off funds right under her nose, that didn't help her case either. It just further reinforced the idea that she wasn't fulfilling her duty to protect the estate's assets. The court ultimately concluded that Lynn's actions, even if they weren't intentionally malicious, were negligent and showed a real lack of regard for her fiduciary duties.
It's a cautionary tale for sure. It makes you realize how crucial it is to be aware of potential conflicts of interest when you're serving as an executor. You're juggling multiple roles and responsibilities, and things can get murky really fast. But let's circle back to those MFFCU accounts for a second. Do you think things would have turned out differently if those accounts had proper beneficiary designations, if they clearly named Lynn as the beneficiary?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? If those accounts had those crucial designations, Lynn could have potentially taken the money without any problems. When assets have valid beneficiary designations, they pass outside of probate, meaning they bypass the will entirely and go directly to the named beneficiary. It's a pretty straightforward process.
So if she had dotted her I's and crossed her T's with those beneficiary designations, she might have avoided this whole legal roller coaster. It's amazing how such a seemingly small detail can have such huge consequences.
It really highlights the importance of careful estate planning and clear documentation. Ambiguity in those documents can lead to all sorts of problems down the road. And in this case, it was a recipe for disaster.
This whole situation makes me wonder, though, how could the credit union advise Lynn to transfer those funds if the accounts didn't have proper beneficiary designations? Doesn't that seem a bit odd?
That's a great point. Unfortunately, the court documents don't give us a clear answer on that. It's possible the credit union was working with outdated or incomplete information. Or maybe there was some miscommunication between Lynn and the credit union. It's hard to say for sure.
So there might be more to the story than meets the eye. This case is full of twists and turns. A little more intrigue never hurts. But getting back to Lynn, she wasn't about to take this lying down. She decided to appeal the orphans court's decision, right? Hoping to get a different outcome from a higher court. What happened with that appeal? Did the superior court see things differently?
She did appeal, hoping to get that surcharge overturned and clear her name. She wanted to prove that she hadn't intentionally breached her fiduciary duty. But the superior court took a look at everything and, well, in the next part, we'll delve into their decision and the lasting lessons we can all learn from Lynn's experience.
So Lynn took her case to the Superior Court, hoping they'd be more sympathetic to her situation. Did they buy her arguments, or did they side with the Orphans Court?
Well, it seems Lynn was out of luck. The Superior Court upheld the lower court's decision, agreeing that she had breached her fiduciary duty and that the surcharge, that financial penalty, was completely justified.
So her attempts to shift the blame onto the attorney and the credit union didn't hold up on appeal.
Not at all. Both courts were crystal clear that relying on professional advice, even if it turns out to be bad advice, doesn't erase your own responsibility, especially when you're in a position of trust, like an executor.
It's a tough lesson to learn, but a necessary one. So let's zoom out for a second. What's the big takeaway here? What can our listener, especially those who might find themselves serving as an executor someday, what can they learn from Lynn's mistakes? What are the key things to keep in mind?
This case is like a masterclass in what not to do as an executor, but it's also full of valuable lessons for anyone in a position of trust, really. First and foremost, remember the concept of fiduciary duty. It's not just a fancy legal term. It's a core principle that governs how you handle someone else's assets. You have a legal and ethical obligation to put the estate's interests and the beneficiary's interests ahead of your own.
So no playing favorites, even if it's your own family.
Yeah.
And definitely no using the estate funds for personal gain, no matter how small.
Exactly. Even if you think you'll eventually inherit it all anyway, you can't just dip into those funds. Remember, self-dealing, even if it seems minor, can have some. Absolutely. Organization and documentation are your best friends in these situations. Make sure you have a clear understanding of all the estate's assets, what's coming in, what's going out, and keep a close eye on the accounting. And don't be afraid to ask your attorney for clarification on anything that seems confusing or unclear. If something feels off, trust your gut and don't ignore it. It might be worth getting a second opinion if you're really unsure.
It's like that old saying, trust but verify. It's solid advice for so many situations, but especially when you're dealing with someone else's money or property.
Couldn't agree more. And the third takeaway, which we've touched on throughout this deep dive, is the importance of clear documentation. Make sure beneficiary designations are crystal clear, accounting is transparent, and everything is properly documented. Good communication with everyone involved is also key. This can help prevent misunderstandings, disputes, and potential legal battles down the road.
This case is a stark reminder that even seemingly small details, things that might seem insignificant at the time, can have massive implications when it comes to estate matters. It's not just about following the letter of the law, it's about understanding the spirit of your role as a fiduciary. You're not just managing assets, you're safeguarding someone's legacy, their final wishes, It's a huge responsibility.
You hit the nail on the head. It's a cautionary tale, for sure, but also a valuable learning opportunity. By understanding these key principles, fiduciary duty, active oversight, meticulous documentation, our listeners can navigate the complexities of estate administration with confidence, knowing they're doing everything they can to honor the decedent's wishes and protect the beneficiary's interests.
This has been an eye-opening deep dive, I have to say. I feel like I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have too. It's a reminder that we all have a responsibility to be informed and proactive when it comes to legal and financial matters, especially when we're talking about something as important as someone's estate.
It's been a pleasure unpacking this case with you. It's a good reminder that the law is always evolving, and we all have a responsibility to stay informed and adapt our practices accordingly.
Great advice. And to our listeners, keep those legal brains engaged, and we'll catch you on our next deep dive.